Well, look, I think it is time we made a start. It's 4 minutes past the hour, so I think firstly, if we can have a look at who's on the call and apologies. And I've just received a text from Stephen Deerhake to say he'll be a few minutes late. So if we can note that as an apology for lateness. And Christina, can we have a list of those on the call and apologies received, please?
Sure. From TCNFO, we have Martin Boyle, Keith Davidson, Mr. Spain, Daniel Kalchev, Eberhard Lisse, Paulus Nirenda, Patricia Poblete, Nigel Roberts, and from Liaisons, we have Sherry Langdon Orr. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Christina Nordström and Bernie Turcott. And apologies from Jap Ackerhuis and Hugo Akiri. And following people will join late. Bart Boswinkel, Kim Davies, and Stephen Deerhake. And someone else joined.
Hi there, it's Stephen.
Hi, Stephen.
It's also Dottie.
Hi, Dottie.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, also.
Good, how are you? Okay, so we also have Stephen Deerhake and Dottie Sparks DeBlanc.
Thank you, Christina. Any further apologies? Anyone else on the call whose name wasn't mentioned? Not so. Can we move to confirmation of the agenda? I haven't seen anything on the list. Any issues? Anything missing? Eberhard has his hand raised. Eberhard.
Can I first, before we start, embarrass Keith by congratulating him to his re-election?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, congratulations.
You're here.
Here, here.
Here.
Were you elected for something, Keith?
Sentence to something.
Thank you, Eberhard. I'll feel embarrassed then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Looking forward to serving the community for a little while into the future. Thank you. Nigel has his hand raised also. Nigel.
Are we still on the agenda and the minutes? Yes.
We're on the confirmation of the agenda still at this stage. But
then I approve that and want to talk later.
Okay. If there's no... Oh, I haven't seen anything on the list, so if there's no desired changes, let's confirm the agenda, move to item three, and meeting report of 1 November. And Nigel...
I approve that too, and I'll want to speak on 4.
Okay. Is there anything in the meeting report for the 1st of November meeting that isn't otherwise covered on the agenda? If not, we'll move to item 4. And that is the topic of revocation. Nigel, did you have something that you wanted to raise before we launch into the topic fully?
Yeah, I believe we're talking about the minutes. So
yes.
I'd like to see the word office substituted with the word officials.
In 4.1.1 of the minutes.
Okay. Public official, yes, okay. So noted, Bernie, if we could amend 4.1.1 in the minutes to say public official.
And if I was in a really tetchy mood, which I'm not, I'd complain about the double L in 4.1.3 willful.
I think that's...
But I'm not, so I'm not going to...
I think that's an appropriate point, too, that it should only have, two L's, one in the middle and one at the end. Thanks, Nigel. Okay, can we move on to the topic of revocation? And Bernie, I think there's been a bit of work done during the 2 weeks since the last call. A bit of off-list work as well. So can we have a look at...
Hi.
Hello, who was that?
Becky, sorry.
Oh, hi, Becky. So can we have a can we start to look at the amendments that have occurred since our last call? Thanks, Bernie.
Yes, we've been hacking away actually at section, and I'm going to be very precise because some people don't have access to Adobe Connect. And we will go back to section 524, defining substantial misbehavior. So repeating, section 524 of revocation 2.0. I've put up the text on the Adobe Connect. Since the proposed changes have been rather recent, I'm going to have to import documents. You'll have to give me a minute while I actually get that done.
Hi, it's Kim. I've just joined.
Hi, Kim.
Hey, Kim. So you're just going to put up the suggested changes now, are you, Bernie?
Pardon me, Chris? I did not get that.
Sorry, I said you're just going to put up the suggested changes now, are you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, cool.
But it's going to take me a minute to actually import that.
Okay.
Everyone will be patient with me as they are mostly...
Very, very exciting. Stop talking. Just do.
Yeah. I can do two things at once. Well,
While Bernie's multitasking, I'll just note that Sintra Sikkanen's joined the Adobe Connect room.
Working group, revocation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful. It's being difficult about uploading documents again. But this is not unusual. I'll try that again. Oh, it doesn't like the file name. Keith, while I'm doing this, since I don't want to bore everyone for the next 3 minutes while I'm fixing this, maybe we can talk about, you can lead people in discussion about SIP, and I'll finish getting this done in the next couple of minutes.
Okay, no problems, Benny. So we'll move to item 5 on the agenda and then come back to item 4 if he runs happy. I think there's very little to talk about other than we discussed in Toronto the response that we should make on SIP to the GAC, and then we discussed it again on last week's call with one friendly amendment coming from Martin in terms of a final paragraph to the letter, and really just confirming that response has been sent to the GAC. And I suppose while we're talking about the GAC too, I did follow up with the GAC representatives on the working group to ask them to be perhaps a little more engaged in the work of the working group, recognising that the GAC's going through a very busy period, but noting the comments that came up during the Toronto meeting. So my hope is that Frank and or Suzanne will be more engaged going forwards, but noting neither is on this call. Okay, so unless there's any questions, I think that's dealt with item 5 on the agenda. So can we now move back? I see the document's loaded, so can we now move back to item 4? Thanks, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Yes, so this is a redlined version of what we have in 5. .2.4, just to be clear, and so it's our 525, and is the definition of substantial misbehavior. I'm very sorry for someone that doesn't have access to the Adobe Connect. You'll just have to follow through on the sound because this document has not been posted by email. So basically what we've got is I've taken the original text and we've amended it slightly to clarify some things, and especially after the last meeting we had. So we'll go through it piece by piece, given it's a key element of what we've got. And so let me blow that up a bit so I can actually read it. There.
Nigel has his hand up currently. So Nigel.
I'm just getting ready for Bernie to pause after something with lots of ones in it. He does actually have to read it out if Paulus has not got the document in front of him, so I'm just a little bit quick off the trigger.
Yeah, there's more than just one who are not able to be in Adobe Connect, so yeah, it will need to be reading it in clarity.
So can I carry on, Nigel, or do you want to say something now?
Well, shall I do it for you?
Oh, go for it.
1.1.1.1.1.1. The working group interprets this behavior in this context to refer to conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to, one, carry out the necessary responsibilities of that role, or two, carry out those responsibilities in the manner required by RFC 1591, and then a bunch of deletions. A TLD manager would then appear to misbehave if, and the deletions are as agreed between me and Martin, so I'd see no point in dwelling on them too highly. That was my point.
Thanks, Nigel.
Come on, there's got to be more there, Nigel. All right, so that would be the first real paragraph of that block of text. And just to recap, for those that don't have access to Adobe Connect, and sorry for those that do, but we want to bring everyone to be able to understand what we're doing here. The working group, so we've taken that text, and it would now read, the working group interprets misbehavior in this context to refer to conduct involving the failure of a designated manager to, bracket one, carry out the necessary responsibilities of that role, comma, or, bracket two, carry out those responsibilities in a manner required by RFC 1591, period. Deleted text. It then follows on with, a TLD manager would then appear to have misbehaved if it, colon. So, that's the new text. I see Nigel has his hand up. Nigel.
Formatting suggestion. As it reads at the moment, two does not seem to involve any failure. So either use exactly the same words and put one and two clearly under a colon thing that refers to failure of a designated manager two, or repeat the word fail after the second set of parentheses labeled two.
Okie dokie.
Good.
All right. So basically, are there any other comments on that first chunk of text? I mean, it really technically has not changed a lot. We've just removed, after discussion last week, the stuff relative to in a manner that roughly equates to misconduct in public office. So, and everyone seems comfortable with that. So I don't see that as a big change. All right, moving on to the subparagraph of that one. So basically in the previous section we've got then appear to have misbehaved if it, colon, and this is the paragraph that follows. Willfully neglects to carry out the duties of its TLD manager and or in carrying out those duties willfully engages in misconduct to such a degree and without reasonable excuse or justification as to amount to an abuse of trust placed in him by virtue of his, her, its duties as a TLD manager. It used to read, in him by virtue of his, her, its designation, but given designation was not really covered anywhere else, we thought it would be fair to substitute duties as a TLD manager as designation, but then it then becomes circular. Nigel.
I actually like the change here. I think it adds clarity. The word duties perhaps is, we could leave it in, or we could look for another word like office. I'm kind of easy on this, but in general, I like what you're doing here. Although I think perhaps it's more office than duties, but I'm fairly easy on that.
I see Patricio has his hand raised and then Martin. So firstly, Patricio.
Just to make it a bit more awkward, the him should be changed so it matches the his, her, it.
Yes, I wondered whether it might be better worded as placed in them by virtue of their duties as TLD manager.
That would work linguistically.
I think that's good. It was bothering me also.
Okay, thanks, Patricia. Martin.
Thanks, Keith. I'd like to move away from the gender question of the TLD manager and pick up on the point that I made last time about willfully, which still gives me cause for concern because it doesn't include, for example, any form of incompetence or refusal to invest or to apply the right resources to the activity, and equally well, it doesn't do anything if the person is unable to carry out their duties. For example, they've been consigned to prison or into a lunatic asylum, or they've just gone away for an extended holiday without internet connectivity. So I just sort of put my flag up again to say that I was having concerns with willfully. I still have concerns with willfully. It seems to me that the misbehavior wouldn't necessarily have to be willful. But of course, by putting willful in that particular place, it then has a big impact when you pick up misbehavior in the following section. Thanks.
Thanks, Martin. Chris and Nigel have their hands raised and re-raised and then Ella had. So, firstly, Chris.
I wonder whether I'm not sure that I'm not sure that the tying this paragraph into the second paragraph of substantial misbehavior is particularly relevant, but I can see a possibility of there being something happening where it's not willful, where one might want to consider it to be misbehavior. But Martin, I was wondering, Martin, if you were able to give an example of something where you thought the use of the term willfully would stop it being perceived as misbehavior in a circumstance where actually we all think it would be. Because that's really what I think you're saying, that there are circumstances where that's the case. But I can't really think of... I mean, what about if somebody was in a coma? How do we feel about that, for example?
I think that's the reasonably appropriate question, Chris. And Matt, do you want to respond to that?
Well, yes, it's the fact that somebody might be in a coma, the fact that somebody might have carried out this behaviour that was not actually directly associated with the operation of the domain name and has ended up in prison for, I don't know, drunk driving or whatever and is unable to carry out his activities. But it might actually be something as simple as the fact that to carry out his duties effectively, he needs to invest in the running of the TLD and has not got the resources to do that investment. And it seems to me that here you have got something that, and going back to the terminology I do not like about misconduct in public office, I don't think any of those would be an excuse for misbehaviour in public office.
Can I respond to that, Keith, please?
Yes.
I respond.
Yeah, of course, Chris.
So, Martin, it's like you had me at hello, but then you kind of lost me halfway through. I'm unclear. Your example of somebody who needs to invest is challenging because it's a prerequisite, isn't it? There has to be a real problem. You could be running a very small and sort of neat little CCTLD that's just trotting along very nicely. And how would you judge whether there is, quote, do you choose your question, quote, a need to invest? I don't think that that can sensibly be part of an interpretation of 1591 that is dealing specifically with misbehaviour. But I do think that there is some merit in examining a little more closely how you would deal with things that occur that we all accept would may end up leading to the consequences flowing from these clauses, but that are not willful. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. And now Nigel and Eberhard have their hands raised. So firstly, Nigel.
You'll be surprised to learn I'm going to be very brief. I don't think that any of the examples that Martin has given is misbehaviour, let alone substantial misbehaviour. They may potentially fall under the persistent problems clause. But let's just go back to my position, which I've accepted that is not the position of everybody else in the group, that I believe that the substantial misbehavior clause relates to the application process. And the reason I've come more and more to still think this is that the persistent problems limb incorporates substantial misbehavior, therefore it doesn't actually matter whether or not substantial misbehavior is construed to be attached to the application process or it's a continuing obligation. But when you look at the definition of the two words substantial misbehavior, the substantial part is easy to dispose of. It's just something that is egregious, it's big. Misbehavior is something which is intentional. You can't get away from that. That is the definition of the word.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Eberhard.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think Martin is mixing up, like Nigel suggested, persistent problem and substantial misbehavior. Okay? Failure to be unable to invest because the domain is small is, to be honest, plain nonsense. And it's good that it's being transcribed. Even if I find reading last call's transcripts extremely difficult. I was almost unable to get through to it. Can somebody please tell me what the legal definition of willfully is? Because we are trying to put emphasis in here on that there is some egregious, bad, gross issue connected to misbehavior to make it substantial. Willfully is another word. It probably has a legal meaning. If somebody lives in Mali and it's just fallen under Sharia law, that is surely not substantial misbehavior, especially when he sends an email that can he perhaps agree to a redelegation but doesn't mean it really because he's under so much pressure. That's not misbehavior. And not even substantial misbehavior. Not even persistent problems. I would like to know what willfully means.
Okay, well, I think conveniently we have Becky, then Chris with their hands raised. So, Becky, would you venture to tell us what willfully means in this context as well as making your point?
Well, so willfully essentially means, you know, knowingly and with, you know, with consciousness of what you're doing. But can I just make one suggestion? Maybe I'm totally wrong, but it seems to me that we might be able to solve this problem a little bit if we started with the with the discussion of the text on persistent problems and then went back to this, because when I hear what Martin is talking about being concerned about, it seems to me that the persistent problem prongs is going to solve is going to address the kinds of situations that it would be appropriate for IANA to be concerned about in this case, and that IANA would have, you know, sort of sufficiently objective information about in order to address it.
Okay, thanks, Becky. Now, Chris.
I agree with Becky. I believe that we can probably say that, looking at it, we can probably deal with Martin's issues and persistent problems. If we can, then it solves the issue. As far as willfully is concerned, again, I agree with Becky. It's basically intentional, with knowledge of a likely result. And Nigel's point about persistent problems actually kind of makes me more comfortable with however many ones there are in this, the use of willfully there, because I can see that it's actually intended to deal with something separate. But we should go and look at persistent problems and see if that is something that Martin can, if that actually satisfies Martin.
Okay, so look, can I summarise then? I think we have, if I'm right, I think we have agreed text except for the word willfully at the start of 1.6 to the power of 6. So can we put a square bracket around the word willfully at this stage? And I just wonder if there's anything else that is of concern in anything that has a one in it, you know, these two paragraphs, and invite a discussion on that. And I note that Becky and Becky still has her hand raised. It's down now. So Eberhard and then Nigel. So firstly, Eberhard.
If we mark willfully, I want it clearly written in the notes that we mean to replace it by a word or to clarify it, not just delete it, because that will clearly detract from the egregiousness of the issue.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Thanks, Eberhard. And yes, I didn't mean that by square bracketing it was to delete. It was that this is the word that needs more work. Yeah.
Sure. I just want to make clear that we understand all what we mean.
Yeah. Okay. So then Nigel and then Martin. So Nigel.
Yeah, I'm just a little confused about this. I don't mind returning to this, but I fail to quite understand how these square brackets are going to work, because at the end of the day, it seems that everybody bar Martin is on side with a particular construction that we've put together over about half a dozen calls right now. At the end of the day, if that's the case, then we should just accept the view of everybody and move on. I mean, I've done it. I've been the one person, the one lone voice over the application of substantial misbehavior to the application process. And I've, you know, bowed, you know, we've gone forward. I fail to see how going back and around the circle and then coming back to it will produce any different result in Martin's opinion. But, you know, that's a matter for Martin, and he's on next.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. And look, I don't disagree, but I would like the working group to achieve more than consensus. If we could get unanimity, that would be fantastic. I will be happy with consensus, of course, but I think it is a question of developing an understanding of what the issues are and seeing if we can resolve them. But I think you're right that we're probably, we've been around this cycle a few times, so we probably do need to draw it to a conclusion sometime fairly soon. Anyway, we do have Martin with his hand raised, and Martin.
Thanks, Keith. And yes, certainly if it ends up with me still being unable to accept, and everybody else does, then you have your consensus. But the issue for me is more to try and make sure that people understand what we have written, and that what we're actually writing does reflect the concerns of the people who are involved in calls for IANA to step in subsequently. I would note, though, that the discussion on the 5-1s and the 6-1s is actually all about misbehaviour. It's not about substantial misbehaviour, which comes in the next section. I did put up my hand, though, originally to note, rather than continuing on the theme of willful, that I had also flagged earlier the concern about and without reasonable excuse or justification. And again, I'm not quite sure what would be reasonable excuse or justification for willful behaviour or behaviour that was force majeure. The person is in a coma or has been consigned to a mental hospital or to prison or for another reason is neglecting to carry out their duty as a CCTLD manager. So all I'm doing is just putting up my hand and saying, well, actually, I'd like really to understand what reasonable excuses might be appropriate. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Martin, and that's quite helpful, I think. I see Eberhard and Nigel both have their hands raised, so firstly, Eberhard.
Well, I am, as you may know, professionally qualified to talk about mental asylum, but usually the domain manager is an entity, not an individual. So I don't think we should go there with jail and all these things. As long as the entity, whether it's an individual or a institution or a company or whatever, is able to perform the function, for whatever reason, it's not a problem. if the United States government puts somebody into jail and then says he's unavailable, like it happened once, probably not the right thing to do. I think we shouldn't just go there. We should say, what's the big deal? If there is a big deal, this is going to happen. If there is smaller problems, IANA function contractor staff will do their best to help him to solve out the issues. That's what I think RFC 1591 reads, and that's where we should go back to.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Nigel?
I'm going to do my very best to be extremely brief on this one because it is going round and round in circles down a rat hole which lawyers would love to play all night long but doesn't get us any further forward. It's pig wrestling. Without reasonable excuse or justification means the absence of the doctrine of necessity. We don't think it's reasonable or necessary to eat the cabin boy. That's what it means.
Okay. Point well made. Okay. I don't see any other comments coming forward, so I'll assess that there's a degree of acceptance of the text, other than the willfully still being square bracketed. Okay, I think Becky's suggestion was that we move on and come back. So, Bernie, can we step on, please? Bernie, have we lost you?
Bernie is typing.
Bernie is...
He's dialing back in.
Ah.
But we could get the relevant... Do we know what the page is, King? Because we've... replace this document because it's just a little one, isn't it?
Yes. I'm not sure whether Bernie was intending to head into substantial misbehaviour or going back to the original document. I think, Chris, you should sing us a song.
Sorry, that's
at least saved by Bernie's bell.
That's the wrong button. All right, so we want to go back to Section 5.3 of Revocation 4.2.
Okay. And Nigel, is your hand up for a reason, or did you just forget to put it down?
Nigel, if you're speaking, we're not hearing you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah, Nigel.
Go.
Yeah, I just had to step away briefly. I didn't realise why I was being called.
Oh, just your hand still up. Did you forget to take it down?
I just put it down again.
No, I see it as up also.
Ah, there we go.
It should be down now.
It's down now. Thank you. Okay, Bernie.
All right. So what Becky was talking about, if I understood it properly, is us moving on to Section 5.3, which deals with Section 3.5. Sorry for all of you that are dyslexic out there, including me, which deals with revocation for persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain. So basically, we're not going to read the standard text of... Section 3.5 RFC 1591. The point in question is in cases when there are persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain, the delegation may be revoked and possibly delegated to another designated manager. Becky,
What number in the text?
We are dealing with Section 5.3. I just read from Section 5.3.1.4.
What page is that on?
It's on page 12.
Thank you very much. Got it.
And it is on the screen, Nigel. At least it's on my screen.
We've all got control. control of our own screens, Bernie, that's why.
Yep, yep. And Nigel has his hand raised. So, Nigel.
Oh, I think he took his hand out.
Okay. So I'm assuming there's no discussion in the text of satisfactory.
Well, it's a quote, so I'm hoping it's satisfactory.
Okay, well, we'll carry on.
Well, I thought maybe Becky wanted to take a hit on this, or do you just want me to carry on with the text we have there, Becky?
I think let's just carry on for a little while and then go back and discuss it, but I think it's good to get sort of an overview of what we're talking about here.
Okay. So, persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain. So, last time what we tried to do is deconstruct this into standard parts. Some of it was not too bad. Some of it got some people very upset, and we haven't changed any of that, but maybe on second reading, some of it will have better. So, 5, 3, 2, 1. I repeat, 5321. Satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain and proper operation of a domain are interpreted as being equivalent. I don't see.
Yeah, I can. That sounds okay.
Okay. And the text we have under that says 5.3.2.11. A designated manager that has persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain is not doing a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service for the domain. So basically, we're trying to bring in the notion of what are persistent problems and what they're doing. So are we sort of okay? And again, we haven't really edited this text, so yes, it'll have to be beaten to death and adjusted probably, but is the general concept okay?
No. There's nobody disputing it, so let's say yes.
Before we go any further, can I just make a point here, if I may?
Yes, Chris.
I just think we need to be a little bit careful that we don't get too stuck in the weeds here. All we're trying to do right now is to see if we are comfortable, not worry too much about the actual text, but see if we're comfortable some of the things that Martin has referred to as not being covered under the previous clauses we've looked at could be covered under this clause. Then I think we can bracket those. If we are comfortable, we can bracket those things to one side and then reconsider them when we come back to examine this text in detail.
Okay, thanks, Chris, for the clarification. And yes, I think it's trying to solve a simultaneous equation, isn't it? We need all the pieces in place, and then will it go click? Nigel has his hand raised. So, Nigel.
Yeah, this is in respect of 5322, which we haven't quite reached yet, I believe.
Oh, okay. No, we haven't. Can we just make sure that we've dealt with 53211? And there's no comments. So, Bernie, 5322.
Hey, I'll press the right button so I don't have to dial in again. 5322 in Revocation 4.2. That is, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence, end quote. And, open quote, operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and resilience, end quote, are interpreted as being equivalent. So, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, delegating of subdomains, and operating name servers must be done with technical competence, and operating the database with accuracy, robustness, and resilience are deemed equivalent. Eberhard.
No, they're not. They're two separate issues. Both are important, but whether you, the registry and the DNS, that's what you're talking about, the WHOIS database and the DNS database are two separate issues. If the name servers are failing and but the registry system is there, for example, if your Anycast provider goes out of business, it's a separate issue from if your hosting provider for the registry system goes out of business and nobody can register, but the DNS is continuing to operate. So I would, it's similar, but I think it's two separate issues.
Okay, I think that was trying
to wrap up the technical issues when I was doing that. I understand and accept what Eberhard is saying, and it may be a substantial enough difference that may be important in what we're trying to do right now. Do we have other comments?
Yes.
Please.
Okay, first of all, a minor comment. I'm not very keen on this third-party passive voice are interpreted as being equivalent. I prefer to see would appear to mean the working group thinks that and things like that. That's just a stylistic thing. It's the are interpreted is kind of abrogating responsibility for who's making the interpretation. And, of course, we are. That's our job. Going more to the interpretation side of things, however.
But before you move on to there, Nigel, just a clarification
ahead.
On that. Becky has said that there's a whole bunch of little things like that that she really hates in the language. And once we get general agreement on the concept as we've worked through the documents, there'll be a serious rewrite to address things like that.
I'd be delighted to assist, but don't expect me not to balk, as probably Becky does, at the things as they go past.
No problem with that. I'm just saying I accept what you're saying, and we do have a plan to deal with it.
Fantastic. But that was a minor point. The more important point is this, is that, first of all, I disagree with what Eberhard's just said, but I also agree with him at the same time, and I'm going to explain how that can be. One of the jobs that appeal court judges and senior judges have to do is when they have some complex case before them and they're looking at some law that was written 300 years ago, is you have to put yourself in the place of the legislator or the opinion writer as of the time it was written, not looked through today's eyes. And in one respect, I think what you've written is accurate but unhelpful. And the reason I think it's accurate but unhelpful is it actually adds mud and not clarity by allowing misinterpretation through people looking through this through modern eyes. Eberhard has just done exactly that. Speaking as somebody who has a bit of a technical background as well as a words background, operating the database with accuracy did not refer to operating the registry database. The reason it's there is that the flat file that you edit called the zone file in the DNS is a database. It's a database of NS records and a few other bits and pieces of records. So it does not mean operating the registry database, because when this was written, I would bet that only one or two, probably just .com, ran their registry by having a big database which then was processed to export from it something that became the zone file. Nonetheless, this is an important point here, and I put this before, and I've had different reactions from different people. It's going back to the living instrument document. Do we interpret RFC 1591 as a living instrument? In other words, do we say that the persistent problems with the domain, which clearly and utterly refers to persistent problems with the DNS, also includes persistent problems with registering, modifying, deleting domains through the registry system, or does it not? And that is a question, I mean, I put that forward as a possibility many, many times ago and was told, no, it didn't, it only included the DNS. So I shut up, and now we're coming round and it's being raised again. We need to be very, very clear how we're interpreting this particular part.
Okay, thanks, Nigel and Eberhard.
And as usual, you are right and you are wrong at the same time, and I have no idea how that can be. If you read the first sentence, this, the actual management of the assigning of domain names, I would accept, so I agree with you that at the same time, at that time we did, nobody had a registry system, I would accept in the current day and age that this has to be done reasonably. Okay? You put it in, it stays in, it doesn't get lost, you don't have to pay 25 times per year, things like this. But it doesn't have to be done in an automated manner, it doesn't have to be done by EPP or something like that. Yeah? Otherwise, we must separate this maybe into, maybe we do the same way as before and even make it into more little, more smaller chunks, so that we can deal with each chunk at a time and then later put it back into one big thing.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Vicky?
Yeah, since I led us down this path, I just wanted to suggest that we could spend, I was hoping not that we would be wordsmithing, but that what we would try to do is test out Martin's concerns to see if, as I think, this section addresses those concerns, like the guy has, gone into a coma. So, I hear what everybody else is saying on this, but what I was proposing is a sort of discussing this section in the context of Martin's concerns to see if we can reach consensus that those concerns are addressed by this section of the text.
Okay, thanks, Vicky, and now Martin.
Thanks, Keith, and thanks, Becky, because I actually do think that this is part of the problem that I have with the way that we're interpreting the text. Section 5 is being read very much as being the technical competence, although I must admit when I read the last section, the last paragraph in 3.5 of 1591, I'm inclined to think the proper operation of a domain does actually cover more things than just running it with technical competence. What is giving me concern between our interpretation of 3.4 and our interpretation of 3.5 is that we've ring-fenced things in such a way that the person who has some sort of justification for not being equitable to all groups, who is not running the system or investing in the system in a way that keeps it operational and meets the demands being put on onto the system, isn't covered by either, and that I think is a fundamental problem for us. It might not be now, but I suspect that once we've put this one into the GAC will turn around and say, well, yeah, we have examples where somebody has not carried on running the system at the level of the demand is not providing that equitable service, and we can't do anything with them because you've written the rules one way for 3.4 and another way for 3.5, and there's a gap in between the two.
Not unreasonable point, but it's a shame the GEC aren't engaged on the call, so they could be venturing their own opinions along the way.
Yes, I would certainly agree with you there, Keith. What I'm worried about is making sure that what we're doing is not going to end up going into the GAC and the GAC saying you have written this document in favour of yourselves, because at that particular point we start losing credibility with the GAC as being trying to work this one out in an objective rather than a subjective way.
Fair comment too. Becky and then Stephen. So Becky.
So let's just take those two things in turn. So the notion that somebody is sort of not registering fairly, not operating the system in a way that's equitable to all of the parties concerned, that is something that I think, absent technical result of that, would go into 3.4. But in that case, the willfulness issue would be resolved by somebody being told that they were not operating the CCTLD in the manner required by 1591, and anything after that would become willful. So that's how I would answer the first part of that. The second question, in terms of the somebody's not investing enough to have the service function in some way that somebody determines is what's expected, worries me absent a sort of technical outcome. I mean, as in, the system doesn't hangs, people can't get their names registered, it doesn't resolve things, whatever it is. That would be an objective way where you look at sort of the functioning, how the domain is functioning, and say that's a persistent problem. Whereas if we called upon IANA to make some judgment about whether a CC operator had invested sufficiently, I wonder how we would, what basis IANA would, make a decision about whether there was sufficient investment. So I guess I would say that's a place where we ought to be looking to the operation, the technical operation of the CCTLD as supplying the answer to those other questions.
Okay, thanks, Becky. I've got Stephen, then Eberhard. So, Stephen.
If I may go back to earlier point here, while it may be of some use to us to have Martin's insight from his past GAC experience, it does not per se indicate what current GAC thinking actually is, and I would implore the chair to do what he can to get GAC participation once more in this working group, because I think without it we've got some problems coming up potentially.
Fully concurring, and I am following up, as I suggested on item 5 on the agenda, I am following up with the GAC to try and seek their re-engagement in their processes.
Great.
And yes, yeah, it would be very much, I mean, I appreciate Martin's understanding of the GAC's working methodologies and seeking to keep us on track with that, but you know, I do note that you know, the GAC's participation itself would be much more appreciated. Anyway, thank you, Stephen. Everhard.
I've had about enough of this GAP prep. They have people on this committee who never pitch up, who never participate, especially when it's outside working hours. We have CCTLD that presented this. It's a CCTLD process. If the GAC doesn't want it, I don't care. Then they can give advice, we interpret the advice, and that's it. I've had enough of this. This is a CCTLD working group where CCTLD members and GAC representatives can give their input. They're never there. They don't want to participate. Their problem. We're not going to start best practice to get best practice in. Yeah, we have never had best practices. We will never have best practices. We will interpret this as a reasonable demand. We will not inflate this as investment and all sorts of other things. Has never been the case in the RFC, and will not be the outcome of this group. If this happens, we get a full vote on it. We have got 5 or 6 people voting against it. We will have minority vote. We have a big drama. It's not going to happen, and I'm starting to really get irritated about this unnecessary, repetitive stuff that is of no consequence.
I'll buy a fight with you, Everhard, and say no. Our work will not be successful unless the GAC agrees with our work. I do feel quite strongly that they should be engaged in the process. We deliberately sought this working group to be inclusive of the GAC and the GAC's contribution to it, and we started down the path with their good and useful and valuable contributions along the way. It appears that over the last 6 months or thereabouts, the GAC have been distracted with other issues, and I think it falls on me as the chair to try and encourage the GAC to be more fully engaged so that we are travelling down a path together rather than at loggerheads. Anyway, I think, Stephen...
Can I just come in again? I don't criticise you. I'm criticising Martin, and I'm criticising the GAC representatives. They know they're supposed to be here, but it's outside of working hours, so they are never here. If they are not here, then they must take the report as it's come and issue an advice on it. We cannot preemptively, obediently try to think, the GAC might be upset. They are supposed to be represented. You must try again to speak to the GAC chair to get these people to join. I know the Venita is reading this, which is why I'm harping about this now, so that she reads the transcripts, that she listens to what we're saying, and then she gets the people back on board.
Okay. Look, I think Stephen's hand's still up because he didn't take it down. I have Martin, Nigel, then Cheryl. Unless, Stephen, this was a re-raise of your hand. Not hearing anything from Stephen. So, Martin.
Thanks, Keith. Where to start? I think I'd like to start off by flagging that before berating the GAC, an awful lot of my concern is making sure that I properly understand what it is we're hoping to achieve, what some of the words that have been put into this text actually do mean. And I'd go back to something that Becky said in her intervention and right at the start of her intervention. when she made a reference to willful. And she said, and I thought it was actually quite a useful way of describing willful. It's certainly one that helps me understand what the concept is. She said that willful is being told that you're not managing in line with RSC 1591, and then you do nothing about it. And if other people share Becky's interpretation of that definition of willful, then I would like to see that in some way captured in our definition of willful, because certainly it is a definition of willful that I could easily live with. The sufficient investment point, and I was a bit surprised because I think somewhere in my brain I've managed to forget the fury that reference to good practice or normal practice or standard practice in CCTLDs, which we discussed and I thought people were generally happy with as being a way of benchmarking what is good technical service, what is a reasonable way of behaving oneself. I was a bit surprised with Eberhardt's vehemence that good practice is something that he would not be willing to live with. It would seem to me that for IANA, trying to judge whether somebody is misbehaving, whether somebody is providing a relevant and appropriate technical service, or rather doing it with technical competence, of having some benchmark that might relate to the size of the registry, it might relate to the background or the connectivity or the location of the registry, but it is a way of saying this meets or this is in line with or this approximates to the sort of level of service that other people are providing as being a way.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Nigel then Eberhardt. So Nigel. Oh, sorry. Nigel then Cheryl then Eberhardt. So Nigel. Nigel, you're on mute. Nigel, we're not hearing from you. So
Let me try again.
Ah, there you go.
Okay. With respect to the chair, I'm going to disagree violently with something that Eberhardt said. He said he didn't blame you for not having the GAC involved. Well, I do a little bit, I'm afraid to say. You're big enough to take this weight on your shoulders. There's been a breakdown of enthusiasm between the GAC representatives and this group. This is about the third or fourth time that this has come up, and you know, we have Martin with his experience of his previous role being a kind of unofficial representative, but we cannot do without the participation. This is supposed to be a joint working group. I said this at the last meeting, the face-to-face. This is a joint working group. How can it be a joint working group if we don't have participation? So, you know, claiming that the GAC won't like this and the GAC won't like that, all they can deal with is the output of this group, which we are doing objectively, reasonably, and we are all putting an awful lot of time and effort, some of which smaller registries have a disproportionate effect on our manpower. But we do it nonetheless. We've been dedicated to this multi-stakeholder environment. Some of us have been coming to these meetings since before ICANN was incorporated. And, you know, it behooves you a little bit, Keith, to try and take some people outside and spank them. And I didn't... perhaps I should withdraw that mild vehemence, but you know what I'm getting at, don't you?
I fully understand, and I certainly got the message in Toronto, and I am talking to our GAC colleagues to see if I can achieve a re-engagement. But I do. I can only work on the principle of you can lead horses to water, but you can't make them drink. Anyway, thank you, Nigel. Cheryl.
Thanks, Keith. Okay. Right, what's after some of those inventions? What I wanted to do was come back to Becky's last intervention, which I thought held two very important points, one of which Martin did recognise, which is, I think, the need for the term willful. We've heard a descriptor of what happens if you're told you are not operating your TLD properly, and then you continue to not rectify the problems, and that sort of becomes willful. But the thing I wanted to pick up on was the requirement to have a pass or fail, a yes or no test, which is not open to interpretation, but I think the term benchmark was used. I'm not particularly fond of that term. I mean, I am fond of the term benchmark, but just not to be applied here. We need to have something that is absolutely unquestioned as a consequence of these persistent problems. And I think the investment example that Martin raised is one of those that is probably more of a problem to try and deal with than not. And I'd like to propose that things which are open to interpretation and debate by others, such as a degree of investment that may or may not be required, should have to fit a test, and that test should be the ability to have continued satisfactory operation, because a small operation could, as has been said, run very well on very little investment. So we can't have X amount or dollar value, or the balls can't be painted blue by definition type rule. We have to have can it or can it not operate properly a satisfactory job operating its DNS service. If we pick up that point of Becky's, not necessarily now, because what we're doing is trying to see if many of Martin's questions and issues would be solved under persistent problems and therefore not need to be dealt with in substantial misbehaviour. The one I think that is sticking in our craw is these sort of greyer areas where we might be requiring something like a IANA operator to, sorry, I have trouble getting enough air in to speak, an IANA operator to make an assessment on what is or is not a suitable amount of investment. So if we can avoid that one, I think we're close, but then we need to then work out how do we deal with the one. And Becky, I don't know whether you have some suggestions about hard tests or go-no-go tests on these, but I'm sure there must be some language that an appropriate authority can look at a setup to say whether it is or is not capable of doing a satisfactory job. Sorry, I've got to go. Back on that mute.
You did finish the sentence there. Well done.
Cheryl giving herself a pause there.
Okay. Sorry. We have Eberhard. I think Nigel was not put down, so I think we have Eberhard from Vicky. So, Eberhard.
There's only one thing that I want to comment on Martin's filibuster, because the rest is not worth mentioning. It was deliberately misstated that I'm against a CCTLD manager providing a good service, but there is no such thing as best practices code. The relationship between ICANN and a CCTLD manager is bilateral. There is no best practice. We have always, even Nominate has always resisted a best practice being forced upon us. And therefore, we're not going to do it now, no matter what somebody who doesn't want to read private emails and what doesn't want to do, says, and who wants to bore me to We don't. It's starting to get really personal. Starting to get really unpleasant, and I'm really starting to get annoyed by it.
Okay. Thanks, Anna. We've got Becky, then Martin. Becky.
So I completely agree with Cheryl, and just to sort of reiterate, I am very concerned that we not create some standard here. I mean, aside from the fact of, making a decision about what level of investment is right for any TLD is certainly out of the scope of this group, but also I think properly not within IANA's expertise, skill set, or job functioning. I do think that IANA regularly evaluates whether the sort of technical resources are in place to operate a domain. It does that whenever it recognizes a new delegation, a new manager. And I think that's perfectly easy for them to do, to make a sort of a judgment about whether you have all of the technical pieces in place. And then after that, what I would propose is to use the technical, the operations. Are you operating the domain name in a technically competent fashion is the right test for any of the other things, lest we get into a completely subjective mess. Now, there are lots of other ways to address the, is there sufficient investment sort of within the country and by the local community. But I don't think that we could hope to come up with, sort of a here's what we think the right level of investment is for any CCTLD operator. Now, we do have, as Martin indicated, that we do have in another place, we have suggested that, we could survey CCTLD operators for some information on their practices, but I don't think that I ever contemplated that would be related to, investment level, but to more sort of objective things like, how do you do X, Y, or Z in terms of the requirements of the operation. But I do think that Martin's example is a really, there's a kind of fundamental question in play here as to sort of what can IANA reasonably be called upon to pass judgment on. And so the technical operations, a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service based on the criteria, that's squarely within the IANA wheelhouse. So the investment question is exactly the kind of question that I think we want to, avoid having IANA make subjective judgments about things where there's going to be disagreement and where there's frankly no right answer, because it's going to be different for every CCTLD.
Okay. Thanks, Becky. Martin has his hand raised. So Martin.
Thanks, Keith. In response to Eberhard, I didn't actually say best practice. I said good practice, and I talked about benchmarking. And I was thinking very much on the not on the what you put in, but rather what you get out. So in other words, that it is not your investment, but if that came over, my apologies, that's not what I meant. It's your actual performance, how are you delivering, at what are your criteria for technical competence in delivering a service, what is the proper operation of the domain, and certainly I would not propose that there is one answer, one model that fits all. Rather, that I think that there does need to be some objective test. I don't think it's an objective test, but something that is subjective, because you have done some comparisons that say you are providing a service that is close to the sort of level of service that other people are providing, actually, you're way, way, way under par, which is why the issue of revocation is coming up. Perhaps there's been a misunderstanding in what I've said, but certainly, no, I have no intention of imposing a single good practice or a single best practice on everybody, because I don't think such a thing is practical or possible or particularly relevant. Getting to some sort of level of, and perhaps it's a service level agreement type of definition, you know, what is a sensible level of service that somebody should be applying, depending on the sort of benchmarking or conditions in other places. Because at the end of the day, if somebody is complaining about the way you're operating the service, then having benchmark, some figures, some ideas where the operator can say, well, you know, I'm doing the same level service as ABC, and therefore it's unfair for you to be addressing me and saying that I am not providing a proper service under the terms of 3.5. Thanks.
Okay, well, I think Martin, unless we can actually tie such a determination of practice to the actual wording in RFC 1591, then we are in danger of wandering down that path of inventing policy as we go, or as an aside, potentially saying here's something that a policy development process will need to be gone through exterior to the FOI work group's work. Eberhard has his hand raised, so Eberhard.
Yeah, what I think about what Martin just said is best paraphrased. Keith, can we move on to the next topic?
I think we can. I'm just a bit conscious of the time. We're 1.5 hours in, and it's been fairly intense. Bernie, can we move on?
We can try. I guess getting back to, I see Nigel has his hand up, so maybe you want to deal with that first. Or?
Yeah. Okay, Nigel. Nigel.
You're mute.
Yeah. Nigel.
Still on mute.
It says mute off now.
Is
that correct?
It is correct.
Okay. There is a motion in parliamentary practice that is appropriate to this stage of the game that this House doth adjourn. Perhaps we don't move on. Perhaps we adjourn. I think all of us have been wearied enough, but if you really want to continue with the self-flagellation, then I'll stick with it for a little while.
Well, let's give it another bit of a batch and see if we haven't made some progress. Bernie.
Right button, don't disconnect yourself. Okay. As I was saying earlier, and maybe in line with part of what Nigel was saying. I mean, we started down looking at 5.3 to try and understand if it met some of Martin's concerns of things not being covered under substantial misbehavior. And we didn't really want to relitigate the text at this point because it hasn't changed. We had issues last time. We're trying to get around it. But the notion, I guess, boils down, or maybe I'll just try to get some feedback instead of trying to lead us anywhere, is that the reality of Section 3.5 of RFC 1591 in our current context of revocation is the last paragraph. In cases where there are persistent problems with the proper operation of a domain, the delegation may be revoked. So, this is what we're looking at. And I think this is what Becky was going after. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Becky. And really the idea of, I think maybe what would be more useful is to have a good understanding of what proper operation of the domain is. I think as Nigel has put it, you know, we can interpret it against what we think, you know, all the bells and whistles around that mean today. But at the end of the day, it means, is the domain working properly? I mean, we'll end up defining words around it, but I'm hoping that to a certain extent, in a general format, we all have some sort of understanding of what that means. I mean, the domain works. And going back to Cheryl and Becky's point, talking about investments and this and trying to define, as far as I'm concerned, we're heading into policy development. And we've gone down that rabbit hole, and I've taken you down that rabbit hole to be beaten up at some point, quite correctly, and saying, we can't do that. Okay? The only thing 3.5 says is, in case where there's persistent problems with the proper operation of the domain, the delegation may be revoked. And, you know, so it's going to come back to the general notion of what's the proper operation of the domain. And we're given some clues in the previous paragraph. There must be a primary and secondary name servers. Well, we've heard from Yop. We've heard from Nigel. Old-style terminology, but there must be functioning name servers is the way we're going to interpret that currently, and that certainly applied back then, too. So we're not inventing things. And there are other things like that. So if the domain is not going to end up working properly, and this is a persistent situation, then we've got the basis for that. And to my mind, Martin, doesn't that address what you're talking about? I mean, you're talking about a lot of specific cases, and that's probably the way your mind works, and I can relate to that to a certain extent. But, I mean, we're saying, you know, in this section is this domain working? And when Postel wrote this, was it about the full envelope? Is maybe where we're at. But to me, if we're trying to answer Becky's question when we got into this section, is does the notion that we have to have a domain that is properly operating cover enough sins that we're trying to deal with in some other areas?
Okay. Thanks, Benny. It was most useful. I'm not sure if Nigel's hand was still up or he failed to take it down or he has a new point, but I saw Nigel and Everhart both in strong agreement with Bernie's comments there, and Nigel has taken his hand down, so Martin has his hand raised. So Martin.
Thanks, Keith, and thanks, Bernie, for that that intervention, because I think it does sort of highlight certainly where perhaps for me what I'm trying to say is perhaps being misinterpreted along the way, or perhaps is being interpreted in a specific way along in the discussion. I guess what I'm really sort of, I'm struggling with some of the terms and trying to make sure that I understand what the terms and what the consequences of the terms mean, hence my problem with willful. If at the end of the day we have a definition like Becky came out with on willful of being told that you're not managing in line with 1591 and that you carry on doing it like that, then the clarity of the term willful puts it to me that, yes, I can understand what the positive or negative test is. Why have I got down into details? Well, I haven't deliberately. It's because when I've said, well, what does this mean, or I'm not sure I can properly accept the term of willful, term of willful action without really knowing it, knowing what that means, because there will be cases where I'm not doing it willfully, it's just I can't help it. That's exactly where I am for doing it. And therefore, what I think I'm looking for is things that can easily be seen as having a proper test associated with them, and then what is being tested. So, for example, on the proper operation of a domain, what is the proper operation of the domain? Can you actually write that down in, or can you have it so that it is understood? And secondly, the proper operation of a domain, we had the question asked earlier, the statement made earlier, that we're seeing proper operation of the domain as being equivalent to a satisfactory job of operating the DNS service. I could probably accept that if I properly know what proper operation of the domain is and exactly how we are fitting the different ways in which the operation of the TLD might be done incorrectly and what the remedy for the local internet community, the interested parties in the country, if that is not being done to a reasonable level of satisfaction.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Nigel has his hand raised, and I think I'll draw a line under Nigel, and we will move on. So, Nigel, final speaker on the topic.
Well, one of the two things I was going to say was to repeat my suggestion of adjournment, but one thing Martin said is entirely correct. If something isn't willful, it's not misbehavior, and that is the point. So it doesn't matter whether it's substantial or not. If it's not willful, it's not misbehavior, and that's the dictionary definition of the word, and that's it. If we're dealing with something different, we're dealing with something different. But willfulness does not come into persistent problems. That's an objective test based on whether the domain, as Bernie says, works or not.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. I think we, despite it appearing that we've sort of reached some impasses, I actually think we've made quite good progress today, and probably Bernie has some additional ideas of where he might be able to work on this, and certainly I do. So I think rather than prolonging the call and risking going circular, we should probably call an end to today's call at this point and let us retire to our corners and rework what we can and come back fresh in a couple of weeks' time and reattack the subject with further vigour, hopefully with the GAC participating as well.
Thank you for your impartial and calm chairing of this particular call.
But it's all good fun. Okay, so with that, unless anyone... Bernie, is there anything else you wanted to touch on in terms of revocation while we're here?
No, sir.
Okay. I see Eberhard has his hand raised. Is this a new topic, Eberhard?
No, I just wanted to know what time is it going to be in 2 weeks?
The next meeting, it's up there on the agenda on your screen. It's at 300 UTC, 29th of November.
3 in the morning?
0300, yep.
Okay.
Okay, so if there's nothing else from anyone, I'll draw the meeting to a conclusion. Thank you all for your participation. I think we have made further steps of progress. It is a tough topic, and I think our progress is coming slowly but surely. So I think we'll continue to work with people during or in the interim, and I think we'll have some further advancements of text for you in the next week or so. So thank you all, and have a lovely day, what's left of it, for you.
Thanks, Kate.
Hi, everyone.
Bye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye-bye.